know you check my texts. Don't you worry about my ex.
That wraps it up for another edition of Flashpoints. Our executive producer is Dennis Bernstein. Our roving producer and producer of Flashpoints in Espanol is Miguel Gavilan Molina. Our technical director is Mike Biggs. For more information about the show, to listen to or download archived episodes, log on to flashpoints.net or visit our SoundCloud page at soundcloud.com/flashpoints. For questions or comments about Flashpoints, you can contact Dennis at dennisjbernstein@gmail.com. Thank you for listening.
KBOO Portland.
As we seek alternatives to police as first responders in mental health and other crises, CAHOOTS, or Crisis Assistance Helping Out on the Streets in Eugene, Oregon, serves its community with medical teams and de-escalation techniques, often without involving the police. Join us 9 a.m. Thursday, April 29th, as we learn about CAHOOTS, an innovative program that is being replicated in many cities, including Portland, Oregon. That's 9 a.m., April 29th, on KBOO.
Artuk Bus Stop is on an April spring break. Tune in May 26th for our conversation with musician Poppy Fimbres. For now, enjoy a rebroadcast of our January 2021 interview with Roya Amir Soleimani and Roshni Takor.
Welcome to Art Talk Bus Stop, a monthly youth-centered podcast about how artists do their work and make a living. I'm Nicole Cabrera.
And I'm Erica Thomas. We're co-hosting the January 2021 episode featuring a conversation with Roshni Takor and artistic director and curator Roya Amir Soleimani. Roshni is an artist who uses art to broaden an understanding of place, uncover histories, elevate voices, and expand a sense of belonging, all with the hope of reconstructing power. Since 2019, she has been the artist-in-residence at the Asian Pacific Network of Oregon, a statewide grassroots organization uniting Asians and Pacific Islanders to achieve social justice.
Roya Amir Soleimani is an arts administrator, educator, and artistic director, and curator of public engagement at the Portland Institute for Contemporary Art, also known as PICA, and a distinguished member of the arts community in Portland. Welcome, Roya and Roshni.
Thank you for having us.
We invited you both here because we thought it would be interesting to learn more about the relationship between artists and institutions.
And so, Roya, in our email conversation as we were planning the podcast, you wrote to me that institutional and curator-artist power dynamics are real. And I think it would be interesting to talk in the podcast really openly about this. I agree. I think that that'd be super interesting. So that's why we have an artist and a curator on here together. I know that both of you have some administrative work that you do. What are some of the challenging things about artists collaborating or working with institutions? And also, what are some of the most exciting or kind of magical things that can happen with those relationships?
Roshni, would you like to start or shall I?
Roshni, why don't you start?
You want me to start? Okay. So the challenges between artists and institutions. I just finished grad school. I've just finished the program that Erica just graduated from as well, the PSU Art and Social Practice program. And for my thesis publication, it was really understanding the relationship between artists and institutions. I know that, like, for example, galleries, like, I didn't grow up going to museums, or, like, the arts weren't really a part of my life. My family is, like, immigrants, and I was the first kid born in the States, and I really loved art, but I also didn't feel connected to it in the institutions that were in Atlanta, Georgia. And I also felt like there weren't works of art that represented me or my culture or things that I was really interested in. But I also knew that I wanted to still be an artist. And so, yeah, there's always this, like, tension that I've had with, like, institutions of, like, because there's been this authority of what art is, who it's for, who the audience is, and things like that. And I think that's kind of been internalized, and even me, like, showing a piece in an exhibition, I think this year, and I'm like an old person, I'm feeling this year is the first year that, like, I'm like, okay, I can actually do this, and I, like, my work belongs in this space. And it was because the director was, like, super supportive and super communicative, and, like, it felt very collaborative, so it was a different kind of working style. And the other artists that were involved in the exhibition also worked on issues that I was interested in, and there was, like, more relevancy in that. So the institution itself and the art and the artists were more representative than things that I've, like, known for a large part of my life.
Yeah, I have a somewhat similar background to Roshni's experience of coming from an immigrant family and first generation experience in that regard, but also not necessarily being dissuaded from participating in art or visiting museums or experiencing cultural activity, but also not having it necessarily be actively encouraged. I was sort of self-directed in taking myself places or indicating that I wanted to engage in that way as a young person. And so I just kind of carved out some paths for myself that took a lot of work for a femme person of color. Given that a lot of institutions were and still are very predominantly white spaces. So I can relate in that regard. I didn't necessarily have language for it when I was younger, but I knew I wanted to work in some way with the arts. And most of the models I had for that were institutions, like brick and mortar institutions, but I didn't know necessarily what they were called or what that signified. And then once I was in college and then eventually in graduate school, those experiences sort of revealed to me the ways in which I did and didn't have access to those spaces or those jobs and some of the inequities therein. But ultimately, I ended up being an artistic director and a curator within a contemporary art institution. And in that role, I really understand the power and influence that a position like that can hold, and that there's a lot of ethical responsibility when it comes to the opportunities that you have a lot of influence over when it comes to opportunities for artists.
Kind of taking it back a little bit, just to get to know you guys a little bit more, Roshni, how would you explain the type of art you make, especially since it is not the most traditional work? What does it mean to you more so to be a social practice artist and to do the kind of work that you do?
That's a great question. I feel like it's a different answer each day, you know? I feel like the things that are important to me are working with people. I think a lot about my practice, I think especially recently, is like decentering the artists and kind of like, I've always felt that like I didn't have all the answers, and like I have a creative practice, but I'm really interested in what can be made together. And I think that's I think a natural thing for musicians or like people who do film and things like that. But I was never interested in doing those things as much as I like really love like photography and making publications and just like all of these other kinds of forms. So collaboration, relationships, like the relational space and the moments that can be created through art is what I'm interested in, and also like really kind of like opening up possibilities. And I think this is like the exciting thing about me being in me as an artist working in a social justice organization, and how the blurriness there of yes, I'm doing administrative work, but in all of my social practice projects, I do administrative work, and like I send emails and I have to figure out a budget and all this stuff. But now I have like an amazing collaborator who's my boss, who like we come up with creative ideas. We have a like instant audience because we have a community that we're embedded in that can be participants, collaborators, thought generators. And so the place-based community relational work is what kind of like is the foundation of the work. And then it comes out in many different ways. It comes out in a video, photo, it can come out in a publication. So the form always changes, but I think the process is pretty much the foundation of the practice. Does that make sense?
Yeah, kind of. Seeing that you do a lot of kind of different work and that you've worked with different organizations, now that you're kind of working with Apano a lot more, do you consider that part of your work part of your art practice, or is it something sort of separate from the stuff that you've done outside of it?
So I'm saying that I'm the artist there, and even though like my official title is cultural work coordinator, like Candace, who is my boss, sees me as the artist, and I've been like saying I'm the artist in residence at Apano, and I've just been keep on saying it to like more and more people, and then like people keep saying that too. So it's like that's what half of the things about being an artist is like you just can build it your own self. And this is what like graduate school kind of like allowed me to rethink. It's just like this is one-stop shopping. It's all in one. I can like just go to work and get all my like art stuff done and then like do other things afterwards, like talk to you guys.
Well, I kind of want to steer this in a little bit of a different direction, focusing more to Roya. You were really excited to have someone on here who isn't really connected to you personally in terms of work. From your perspective of an admin, how do you go about choosing the artists you decide to work with? How do you kind of determine who do you work with and so on?
Yeah, thanks for that question, Nicole. I was interested in being in dialogue on this show with an artist that I hadn't necessarily worked with directly on a project through PICA, because I do think that there can be a power dynamic between a curator and an artist. And you can have great experiences working together, but still there's always that power that an institution might hold. And the people who represent that institution and the artist, there's power in like labor, in status within an art world hierarchy. As false as it is, there are still real privileges and lack thereof in that regard. So Roshni and I definitely know each other, and we've had shared experiences, and we share community. But this was a chance to be connected to an artist that I haven't worked with curatorially yet. What I would say for how I think about identifying and selecting and cultivating relationships with artists that I eventually end up working with, one, I want to say that I am one of three artistic directors and curators at PICA, and that team of three of us, my colleagues being Erin Boberg-Doughton and Kristen Kennedy, we work together. So we do leave each other room for autonomous decision-making and projects that might be our own or that we take leads on, but we really do make collective decisions. And I think that the work that PICA does is better for having a multiplicity of perspectives around the choices that we make. We do prioritize working with Black, Indigenous, and POC-identified artists, queer, trans, and gender nonconforming artists, artists who identify as disabled, artists who might be immigrants, undocumented perhaps, refugees, historically and still underrepresented in the mainstream art world. So that's really important to us, first off. It's not exclusively who we work with, but it is very much predominant. And it's part of our values and our politics. Secondly, we work with living artists, unlike, say, a museum that might work with the archive or work by an artist who's no longer living. We are often commissioning a project, which means that we're working with an artist or a group of artists or a collective to develop new work. And we are investing typically in that project And its development and creation, not just like putting it on display because it was already made. And we're trying to think and be really conscientious about all of the labor that an artist puts into a project. When we think about how much they're paid, when we think about their contract, when we think about artists as laborers, what does it mean that there are all the emails that they have to send in preparation? What does it mean that they have to procure supplies and materials to make their work or pay other people to make their work? All these things inform the output of that project. The experience that I have working with each artist is very different, and I try to not be formulaic about it in a way that centers and supports that artist and the particular ways in which they want to realize the project. What is their working methodology? What are their values, their politics, the context in which they're working, and be responsive to it. And I think that's one of the best things institutions can do, is to not template the way that they work with an artist.
Mm-hmm. So Roshni, when looking for an organization for either grant, support, on a new project that you're working on, how do you go about doing so, and what are some of the struggles you face during that process?
So I also want to talk about like the precariousness of being an artist when it comes to and that relationship to institutions. And I have to say I'm in a very like gracious, generous position at the moment. And this doesn't necessarily answer your question, but I have like stability in a way that I've never had as a working artist. And I have received funding to do projects and I've gotten prizes. However, the ability to know that I can pay my rent, that I can pay my student loans, that I can like just survive and have healthcare and those kinds of like things that having a full-time job allows in this country, that has opened up so much creative space and possibilities to A, self-fund projects, which isn't like the worst thing, or like try to like work with other institutional support that's like connected to Apano. Like there's another museum that's connected to Apano and they're like, they don't have cultural work. And so like I'm talking to them about things. And so because of the resources that I have, because of my full-time job, I'm able to go through different channels in a way that I wasn't as an independent artist, like on my own. So when you're thinking about funding, so the way that I think about funding now is like my collaborator, Candace, my boss, she's an amazing writer and she's an amazing grant writer. And so we have conversations about like the projects that we want to create, and she writes the grant and she gets the funding. So it's a different source of funding, but I still get to seed a project within this context. That's a little different than like the typical avenues of getting funding for artists, but I think there's possibilities there for other artists trying to figure this stuff out.
You mentioned sort of being lucky that you have this position at Apano. Did you ever see yourself kind of getting to that position, or was that something that just happened just by luck, by chance?
That's a really good question. It's it wasn't by luck. It was by relationship building. And so I did a lot of work around South Asian communities and feminist communities in New York City. And I was moving to Portland and I was like, I don't know where the Asian people are. Like, who am I gonna connect with? Like, what are the organizations I'm gonna like connect with? And I found Apano and I met Candace actually at a TBA event. And there was like an artist club there, a collective. And so I started going to those meetings, meeting other artists. And then I just still kept on like showing up to their events, to their opportunities. They had a grant opportunity, so I applied to that, and that led to like another gig that Candace hired me for, and then a position opened up. So it was like a relationship built over like multiple years.
And I'm just kind of curious, for Roya, was that similar in how you got your position, or was the way that you got your position sort of working your way up? And was it kind of a job that you felt was attainable, or was it something that just felt like a dream?
Thanks for that question, Nicole. So similarly, I think it had a lot to do with relationship building, but I want to back up a little bit because I think it's actually, there are a lot of things that are wrong with how people are able to get jobs or are not, or don't get jobs. There are very few jobs in terms of art institutions in the US, especially because there's so little funding for the arts. Most of them are predominantly white institutions. And there is a sort of systemic pattern of how people are generally hired. And it has to do with having access to education, often to higher education, especially for someone in my generation or younger, which Roshni alluded to, often is expected to have a master's degree, whereas people older, I'm 37, people older than me generally don't. The process that I went through was such that it was required in my graduate school program. So I went to grad school. I'm still paying for grad school. I will be paying for grad school for a very, very long time. I paid for credits to do an internship with PICA, my current employer. So I paid to work for free for a nonprofit institution. Nonprofits have been set up to be reliant upon free labor, but that free labor typically comes from someone who somehow has some degree of economic privilege or security ability, I should say, something that makes them have the capacity that allows them to work for no money or very little money. Then that person is the one who builds the relationships with the institution and is thought of as a candidate for a job. And they have a leg up in that process. I was an intern, a graduate school intern with PICA. So PICA got to know me, very similar to Roshni, when a full-time position opened up. I was thought of as a candidate, asked to apply. I was hired. And from my full-time hiring till now, I have moved from membership coordinator to community engagement manager to community engagement director to director of public engagement to artistic director and curator of public engagement. So those are like, some of those things are very nuanced changes of, in terms of job description, and some are significant. I'm now senior leadership within an institution, and I started at there's not much hierarchy at PICA. It's a small organization, but I started at essentially the lowest full-time staffing level, or I started even lower as quote-unquote, as an intern. Think of all the entry points that I had access to along the way, not to mention that I am a person of color, but I'm a light-skinned person of color, and when we talk about who's most excluded from our institutions, it's Black and Indigenous folks. So I just really want to name that and say that most of the people who are still in institutions in positions of power that are doing the hiring are white, and they're using white standards, white norms, and white supremacy culture to do the hiring, evaluating candidates, what they expect of their education, what they expect of their job experience, how they expect to operate and perform in interviews, how they expect their career and educational growth to look. This is no different for artists, honestly, but I think that, yeah, in so many ways, I have my dream job. It's not an easy job, and there are a lot of things that are not glamorous about it that people might perceive there to be, but I also have job security, and I also have health benefits, a lot of the things that Roshni was describing that many artists and also independent curators and cultural workers who don't have jobs with institutions do not have.
I just wanted to like comment on that right quick. I'm so glad that you brought up and broke down that whole situation, Roya, of just like the accessibility points and lack thereof in this kind of stuff. And it's rampant in the art field, right? But I think one thing that drew me to Apano is that it's a social justice organization, and it has like one person doing art stuff. And so what I learned through the grad program was looking for opportunities in other fields and sciences and all these other places where artists can actually like learn about collaboration by not just being in this like limited art world space. And so like one thing that was really important to me is like I needed to understand how activism shows up in my work, and I needed to know like where the line between art and social justice is. And it turns out for me to be an artist in a social justice organization, that's the right combination. And in that role, I'm also like advocating for artists all the time within the organization and within the field of like cultural work, so that a bigger, broader like field can exist for artists and cultural workers and curators and all of the creative people.
So Roya, as you said, you're in your 30s and I'm going to enter my 20s in the next 2 years. I wanted to ask you, and also Roshni too, feel free to answer afterwards, what was it like growing up and not having as many role models in art institutes, or just in general, not having a lot of role models that were like you or looked like you?
That's a really good question. I think that the art world is just now beginning to talk more transparently and explicitly about the ways in which institutions have functioned as white, predominantly white spaces with very few Black, Indigenous, and people of color working within them. Often many of us were the only people of color within our organizations at one time, if not still. And that some of us talk a lot about, like, not even realizing how lonely that felt, or how disempowered we might, or voiceless we might have felt, how tokenized we might have felt, and that it is often in retrospect we're able to construct a narrative of institutional racism, discrimination, tokenization, oppression, the way that white supremacy culture operates with sort of a systemic function of the nonprofit world, how those things accumulate, and eventually you're able to kind of put it together and go, okay, from, you know, I can now read it this way or understand these things for what they were. And for me, that now equips me with a language and a consciousness that I can use to try to make sure that that is never someone else's experience. That's my goal.
I just had a question for Nicole, and I think I may have emailed it. I'm just curious about your experience with institutions, and like, what institutions do you feel connected to and belong to, and like, are there ones that you don't, and like, why, and like, what are the differences? And
mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember speaking with Erica about this. It's interesting because at that time, my sister had literally asked me a question. The day before, she asked me, how many people of color, BIPOC people, have you had as teachers or role models growing up? And I couldn't name a single teacher. I couldn't name a single role model that I had. Maybe like one, but one out of my 12 years of being just in constant public school, or just being in public school and going through that experience of not having anyone that looks like me. It's interesting because there's always going to be a disconnect where they don't sort of understand what it's like to grow up, you know, the way that we do. But I think now that I've gone into college, I definitely feel more connection there because I go to PCC. And it's very diverse. And I think I've felt more of a connection to college than I ever did in my 12 years of public school. So, yeah.
There's definitely that experience of otherization that some of us have growing up throughout our lives. And then it's not until we're older that we're able to have either access to spaces or groups or find, you know, other community of friends. And I'm glad you have that, that you're finding that now. Yeah.
Being that you guys sort of focus on sort of social issues, what would you say to those who either want to become more involved or maybe a little timid or intimidated by approaching it? What would you say to them?
It's hard to say, but I really believe in to be in places because you want to be there. It's okay that you're not there. I think it's important for institutions we like have to find out how to make things more interesting and more accessible. Like that's something that we have to work on as institutions. And like, I want it to be fun, whatever you're doing. And even if it is like a very hard subject, like there needs to be lightness there for, and like some other kind of like emotion to carry us through these things, because it's such hard work.
I agree with you, Roshni, that it's the job of institutions to become more welcoming and inclusive spaces that feel comfortable and feel good to be in. I also don't believe that any institution is going to feel like a safe space for everybody. I don't think that's possible. And so what I would hope is that there are more and more spaces that may identify as institutions, or that we would call institutions or not. Maybe there are other kinds of spaces. Maybe we're redefining the kinds of spaces that we gather in for cultural experiences, and that there are a multiplicity of them, that there are different kinds of them that provide what more people are looking for, and that validate their identities and their experiences and their communities in ways that don't exist right now. And I think that it's going to be people your age, Nicole, who are going to be realizing and building those new spaces that we don't have language for yet, and reimagining them. And I hope that they are not 501c3 nonprofits, and I hope they are not museums that look like the museums we have now, and I hope they are not contemporary art centers that look like the contemporary art centers we have now. I hope that they are things we can't yet visualize, and that you all will be the architects of those things, and that they will feel comfortable for you because you had the power to build them, and you did that collectively, and you did it in a way that none of us had a chance to do. So,
well, I wish we had like 10 hours for this podcast. but I want to thank you guys so much for being on here.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much for being with us. It's been such a pleasure.
And I just want to thank both of you, all of you, everybody.
You're listening to